All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Now, stepping away from what Matt Geiger had to say about more of the metals equities, we are chatting with Michael Oliver from Momentum Structural Analysis. We will post a link to his website in the show notes so you can follow along with what Michael does. And it's always very interesting to bring Michael on the show because rather than focusing on price, he tracks more momentum and the trends in a medium to long-term nature for metals and also markets. So, Michael, let's get right into it. And let's start off with kind of the big picture concept of a Fed rate cut. We all know it's coming. We don't know if it's 25 basis points or 50 basis points, but we know a rate cut is coming and there will probably be a series of rate cuts. Carry this over to the markets broadly. Michael, what do you think is priced in terms of market moves already for this upcoming Fed rate cut?
Well, certainly the Fed rate cut is priced in. It wasn't, you know, a few months ago, it was like everybody was thinking December. But when you listen to Powell last month, he made it bleeding clear that they're going to cut rates soon. That he argued that, well, our mandate of inflation is one issue, but it's come down. We're happy with its trend. And therefore, the focus is on staying high too long could do damage, meaning I'm not going to wait for negative data points before I realize I've done damage. We're going to cut rates ahead of then. So they're going to cut rates in September. Now, the issue is 50 or 25. I'm kind of betting on 50. I think a lot of people are. And I don't think it matters. 2001, January, you know, not far off the high of 2000 in the S&P, the dot-com top. The Fed cut rates twice in January of 2001, the very beginning of the month and the end of the month. Market collapsed anyway for the next couple of years, despite rate cuts all the way down. 2007. About 3 weeks before the traded high, which was in October 2007, the Fed surprisingly cut rates. It ambushed Wall Street. They weren't expecting it. And therefore, they rallied sharply. This time around, it's different. Rate cut is not likely to create, you know, a sharp upside surprise because it's priced in. The question is, if when they cut rates, will there be a yawn and then starting some decline? We suspect that will happen. I think maybe you get modest decline in September, but you're really vulnerable getting into the fourth quarter for the stock market, despite rate cuts.
Well, Michael, within the markets themselves, there's different sectors you follow. I know you just put out an update on the financial sector, for example, or you look at retail, you look at some of the value and growth sectors or the tech stocks. Are there any sectors that you think are more at risk of turning over here, or are there any that are in strong momentum?
Well, the ones that are at most risk, and we don't think they'll break up and go the different ways. So there's a lot of people talking now about, well, let's go into small caps. Well, on a spread basis, meaning relative performance, yeah, the small caps might be less risky. But if the market goes down, they're going down too. Okay, just on a lesser basis. The tech sector did lead the advance this time. It wasn't on its lonesome, but it was, you know, NASDAQ 100, for example, went up twice as many multiples since its 2009 low, as did the S&P. S&P went up 7 to 8-fold, NASDAQ went up about twice that. So it's definitely the monster, it's the leader, and therefore we're focused on the NASDAQ 100. And to put it bluntly, when we look at quarterly momentum, which is a fairly long-term metric, that's when we measure monthly price action relative to a three-quarter average. The momentum chart, forget the price chart and the overlay of the average, that's not important. It's the way the oscillator looks. You have set up a floor from hell. And let me put it this way. You go back down right now, the three-quarter average this quarter, and we projected that it would bounce from it, was 17,500. Where did we stop? Just barely below there last month and rallied strongly. The problem is you can't go back to that three-quarter average again. Now, next quarter, meaning in 20-some-odd trading days, that average is going to jump up to about 18,600. Which is like about 4% below the current market. So we suspect that you might see some deterioration in September, nothing dramatic necessarily. But if you get down to that price level, as I specified, 18,600 NASDAQ, and you do that during the fourth quarter, you got a real problem. You could speed up the downside dramatically, and tech will lead the move.
Michael, what does your momentum show you with this kind of rotation trade that we have seen, though? To Shad's point, look, that there are other sectors that are doing well right now. Markets have rebounded, but momentum-wise, if tech falls, but there is that rotation, where do we stand?
Well, there won't be any strong sectors in the stock market other than probably commodity-related sectors, which if you go back and look at the last 10, 15 years, they really don't correlate well to the S&P. They drop down a chart of XLE, for example, the oil stock sector, and look at the S&P. The correlation is nickel dime. It's not there. You know, there were years in which the stock market went up and XLE went down. So there's no correlation there. But in generally, other than the commodity related and gold and silver mining related, the market's going down. The issue is at what speed and what percent drop. And I think the leadership will be, downside leaders will be the prior upside leaders. But one vulnerable sector that you got to watch very closely, and it had a little crash last year, that's the banks. They went drop 35% in about 3 or 4 weeks, March of 2023. They look vulnerable for a major whack again. And so don't just focus on tech breaking. The other components of the market will join it. The only issue is to a lesser extent. Still not a good place to be, but to a lesser extent, they'll go down.
Well, Michael, you mentioned that the precious metals may diverge from the markets. Let's kick it off with gold then. Gold has been strong. It's been on a strong uptrend. Do you think it'll stay in a strong uptrend?
Yes. We think in March, we defined an upturn in gold, the gold miners and silver, that suggested that an acceleration phase of the bull market was commencing. What do I mean? The bull market's been going on since December 2015 low at 1,050 gold. MSA got bullish in February 2016 at 1,140 gold. And frankly, based on annual momentum, there's nothing's changed our mind. A lot of gold bull trends last a decade or so. You go back and look at them from mid-1970s to 1980, for example. Gold went up like tenfold. You know. And 2000 to 2011, it went up from $260 to 1920, but it took it 11 years. Right now, we're in the ninth year. Okay, so we're not that old, but we are in an aged bull market. We think the phase that we're entering now is a more accelerated phase versus the arm wrestling we've seen over the last couple of years, where you get some ups, you get some downs, and net up, but still it's wrestling. I think the wrestling process is about to end, and we're about to go into a noticeable acceleration. And I think that the laggards over the last few years, silver and the miners, will now outpace gold on the upside on a percentage basis during the next several months, especially. The one difference we have this time with the acceleration phase, back in 1979, you had acceleration in gold and silver where they went ballistic on a percentage basis in the final year of the bull trend. We think that this acceleration phase, while it might see drama in the next several months, is not going to top at that point. It might stall, it might level off, you might have corrections. But I think we're headed into a new reality globally, where the monetary metals, particularly gold, are not going to be just another market that goes up and then goes down again. I think they're going to be institutionalized as the monetary backing of the world. And I think that's already underway in certain parts of the world right now, and will get more so, particularly as certain paper assets start to collapse and the central banks panic, hence destroy the underlying value of their money units by, you know, inflating them.
So, Michael, back to some of your research then in terms of momentum. You're right. Gold has been trending higher for about 9 years, just short of 9 years now. It's more than doubled in that time frame. It's also interesting to see that gold versus something like the S&P, the S&P's actually narrowly outperformed gold during that massive run higher. But historically, looking at gold's momentum, I assume it must be a fairly strong momentum metric that you're looking at here with how strong gold has run just in the last, let's say, 4 to 5 months. But what's the historical reference to where gold is momentum wise?
Well, it's, again, what we've done in March after 3 years of sideways in gold and 3 years of downside staircasing in silver and the miners. We had annual momentum signals, meaning when we measure price versus a 36-month average, for example, we had a clear ceiling on these markets where they were capped off during that 3 years. Now, on price of silver and miners, it was decaying, it was down. But on momentum, it was actually a flat structure. All three, gold, silver, and the miners, broke out above flat structures on annual momentum in March At that point, silver was getting between $25 and $26. Gold was crossing 2000 again for the fourth time in price. And GDX, the gold miners, which are now trading at 39, were trading at 31 and a half when they broke out. This is back in March. So they've gained a lot since then, but they've leveled off in the last 4 or 5 months since the April high in gold and the May high in silver. And I think they're resting for the next surge up. In other words, they're cooling off a bit. And I think the next surge up is even going to be more dramatic, far more dramatic than what we saw between March and the present. And I think that a lot of that will occur before the election.
Michael, when you use your system, you often talk about a line of momentum that you want to see it above or below. But does your system put any price targets out there as far as upside targets or downside targets?
I strongly suspect if silver goes back to its highs, and let's call that $32, twice we traded over 32 in May, I think, and again in early July or June, and then we're repelled there, back down to 26.50. Now we're trading 29 to 30 again. You go back up to 32, that's a triple top, and you're going to blow through it. That'll be what's called a triple top breakout if you go through that, hit 33. That's when the price guys are going to suddenly say, hey, golly, this was just congestion. This thing's still hot, you know. And you'll have a lot of people rejoining silver again at that point. We think that breakout, not just on price, but there's some momentum factors here, is likely to carry us through the $50 highs we've seen over the last couple decades. Think about it. Gold's already done that. Even copper, which made a high in 2011 and made a high in 2020, traded above those highs this year. It's backed off some since, but I think it's ready to go again. So silver's really lagged in a sense of, you know, where is it versus those prior multi-decade highs? I wouldn't be shocked to see silver surge past 50 very quickly. You get somewhere well up into the 50s before you even pause again. So I think it could be quite dramatic. So what's happening right now, this twisting and turning we've had for several months, I think is just congestion prior to that next leg of acceleration. And it could be dramatic and with speed.
So do the gold stocks follow silver then? Because those are also off of their all-time highs, but they are testing some important resistance zone from just a couple of years back and back in 2020. Do silver and the gold stocks simply just move together?
Yeah, when we run spread analysis of the gold miners like GDX versus gold, in other words, what's GDX look like this month versus gold on a relative performance basis? It's broken out. Now, it's not back to certain levels that will engage it even more so. But I think GDX, we've got a trigger number just above 40, and it's paused just short of 40 in this recent rally. Right now, we're above 39. You get just above 40, I've got a trigger number up there that says you could really engage. And I suspect if you see that, the number is 40.24 to be precise, anytime this quarter, you're likely to take out those highs of 2020, which was at 45 and a half area, and blow credibly past that very quickly. And during that process, even if you just measure, for example, from the February lows of this year, which was a pullback low in gold, silver, and the miners, where we are now, silver's up as much, if not a little more than gold, but GDX is a lot more up on a percentage basis than gold is from that low. So yes, it's below the 2020 high, but its recent surge has outperformed gold, and I think that will continue. And they are very, very undervalued on a long-term basis relative to gold and GDX relative to the stock market in general.
Well, Michael, you'd also mentioned copper in a previous statement. What's your outlook on the red metal?
We're bullish on commodities in general. Copper behaves in tune with the Bloomberg Commodity Index, basically. Recently, it got a lot stronger than Bloomberg, went up and made a new high where Bloomberg is not. But basically, its big swings are correlated not so much to gold and silver, but to the Bloomberg Commodity Index in general. And I think the Bloomberg is basing and ready for its next significant up move. In fact, if you look at a price chart of Bloomberg, you're trading at 96, 97 right now. You can go back about a year and see it was there. Okay, so it's really not going down. It's just waddling in a 50% pullback from, you know, its 2020 low to its 2022 high. You pull back 50% and gone dead for the last year, year and a half, sideways. So there is support there. And I think Bloomberg this time will join in with gold. It wasn't in sync from 2020 to 2022. During that period, gold had already had its move by mid-2020. Commodities didn't turn up until late 2020. So they're totally out of sync. But I think they're getting back in sync now where it's going to resemble somewhat the late 1970s when after gold started into its last leg of advance, 77, 78, 79. Bloomberg joined in at that point. And I think you're going to see commodities do the same thing, hence copper firm back up as well. But I don't see a stellar event there.
Does that mean energy, oil, natural gas will also take part in this?
Well, I see the technical dynamics for most of the components of the Bloomberg Commodity Index to participate. And I still have a suspicion that grains are likely to be the outperformer. So far, that's not the case. In this basing process, they've actually been weaker. But it looks to me like the grains, when they snap to the upside, could snap on a bigger percent basis than perhaps energy this time around.
Well, Michael, diving into the grains, do you have a favorite corn, bean, wheat, sugar?
No, I'd say the corn, bean, and wheat, treat them as a group, and they're likely to go together. Wheat tried to come up out of here recently, but beans and corn didn't agree at that time, so wheat pulled back. So I don't have a preference on those which of those three, but I think they'll move as a group. And my bet is they'll outperform, percent-wise, I'm talking now, what energy is likely to do in, let's say, copper, for example. And sugar is likely to reassert, too. But they all generally, those commodities are pretty well linked, technically speaking, to what the Bloomberg does. And it's not been in sync with gold, though I think now Bloomberg is ready to join gold and be somewhat in sync with gold.
So is this a general reflation or major inflation trade that you're seeing?
Yeah, I think that the central banks are about to accommodate in a big way because their main concern is they think they've beaten inflation down. Actually, Bloomberg dropped down a year and a half ago and has gone dead. So all their, quote, lower inflation numbers really occurred in the Bloomberg a year and a half ago, dropping from the 2022 price highs to 2023, early 2024. Already had come down and has gone sideways for the last year. And so finally, all their lagged, quote, inflation numbers have now come down too. But I think the real shock for them is going to be that they shift over now to their other mandate, which is defending the debt markets, the stock market, and so forth, and, quote, economic data points, which, as we know, have gone sour anyway, like the unemployment numbers. And the Fed goes to that mandate, in which case, what do? They expand the money supply again. They artificially take rates lower than what otherwise market forces might have them at. And they go back to their inflation mode, which is going to do what? It's going to help fuel gold, silver, and underpriced commodities. And commodities, when you go back historically, look at Bloomberg, in no way is it high priced. We're trading around 100 right now. Back in 2008 and 2011, it was 200 plus in the high 100s. So we're less than half of where we were then in commodity price level generally. So there's plenty of room for them to run. And I think the Fed's about to add more fuel to that tank.
With that in consideration, Michael, how are you looking at the U.S. dollar and interest rates?
Interest rates, you've got to look differently here. Over the last couple of years, especially since COVID, the muni bonds and the high yield corporate debt have performed better on the upside, meaning dropping yields, than the T-bond market. That has totally reversed now. The place to look if you're in interest rates is I think the T-bonds are now an alternative to the stock market. They weren't in 2022, but I think they have technically become an alternative. And I think a lot of large asset managers are starting to move money out of high-risk stocks into what they perceive to be lower-risk T-bonds. And I think they're correct, technically. I think T-bonds are likely to lead on the upside and also participate with gold here, as they did in 2007 and 2008, or as they did in 2001 and 2002. While the market went down, T-bonds and gold went up. But the muni bonds and the high-yield corporate debt do not look like they're in sync with T-bonds. It looks like they could actually go down in price, meaning be vulnerable as an asset category. So if I were in long debt, I would not be in corporate or munis. I would be in T-bonds. As far as the dollar has been dull as hell for the last 2 years almost, since it collapsed from its 2022 price high at 115 dollar index, dropped down around 100. And since early 2023, it has gone in a basically a dull sideways mode, oscillating probably on either side of about 103, 104. Very narrow percentage range, almost trendless. Not going back to its high, not dropping, just going dull. So what we call the quiet one. We broke dollar index long-term momentum numbers, breaking through 104.40 a month or so ago. We're now down to close to 100. Everybody thinks the dollar is going to have a big rally. We see, maybe, maybe not. But the long-term momentum of the dollar says, no, it has shifted. It's now into a downtrend again. The dullness of the last year and a half is over. It's woken up, but the wake up is taking it down. And I think it's going to continue down. So as a major asset category, I think the dollar is about to become a weak factor. And therefore, hence, once again, be wind at the back of gold.
All right. Well, Michael, a lot going in gold's favor than it sounds like in commodities broadly. Boy, oh boy, I think we've all seen that chart of just how commodities have underperformed broad markets over many years, a decade plus. Maybe that will all change. That could be a huge opportunity for investors. But man, oh man, it's been very interesting to see that underperformance in commodities broadly. And hey, you've laid out many times how you think this could change. So again, Michael Oliver from Momentum Structural Analysis. Always great having you on the show, Michael. And everyone, thank you very much for tuning in to this weekend show. Be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, our podcast and YouTube channel. Just search The KE Report. Listen to all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. And be sure to tune back in next week as we continue to talk market moves and key economic data. Michael, everyone listening in, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.